Blog Talk Radio.
I'm your host, Chris Stevens. Hopefully you're having a nice day on this gloomy Tuesday morning. If this is your first time tuning in, All Subjects Everything is an internet interactive radio show. When we are live on the air, you can call in with a question or comment at 661-554-9194. You can also check us out in the Blog Talk Radio Network chat room while we're recording, as a few of my esteemed listeners like to do from time to time. Share your thoughts and feelings there on what we're discussing, or if you just happen to be following from Twitter, just use the All Subjects Everything hashtag. And if you can't listen to us live, check us out on iTunes. We're available in the iTunes store under podcast for free. You can search for All Subjects Everything there and download the shows for free, and then write a little review and rate us from 1 star to 5 stars. Write a little review, let us know what you like, what you don't like, what you'd like to hear and see in future shows, and we will do our very best to accommodate you. And for you smartphone users, we don't want you to feel left out. We don't want you to feel left out. All Subjects Everything is available on the Stitcher mobile app. You can download Stitcher to your smartphone. Search for All Subjects Everything there. Take us with you in the car, the gym, the office, wherever you want to get in on the conversation. Don't forget to like our Facebook page as well. Today, well, actually tomorrow, I should say, is the last go-round for the All Subjects Everything question of the week. We'll be taking answers right up until 10 a.m. showtime tomorrow. Facebook.com/ All Subjects Everything. There you can find past links to previous shows, news updates, and once again, poll topics and questions. Hopefully we can turn that page into a forum where listeners discuss certain things. We jump in, y'all discuss among yourselves, and we can have a better show that way. Okay, so yesterday we spent much of the morning talking about Steve Harvey's regrettable error in announcing the wrong Miss Universe from Sunday night's Miss Universe pageant. Steve probably has to be thanking God for R. Kelly today and yesterday. If you missed that yesterday, R. Kelly released a new album today called The Buffet, and he went on Huffington Post Live to presumably talk only about his album, which has always been the dirty little secret whenever he reappears in public, is that people are only supposed to ask him about his album, not the other stuff. But Caroline Motoresi Tarani had another plan in mind. She sat down and read the questions from Twitter and from the and from the Huffington Post chat room, which she was doing pretty standard fare stuff. I mean, when you do that kind of stuff with a site like the Huffington Post or, you know, Sports Illustrated, ESPN, Vibe, you know, GQ, L, whatever, when they do that type of live feed type of stuff, the questions are going to pop, always. But people were not going for the standard, let's ignore what R. Kelly has been accused of and in some cases, you know, bought the silence of people to say that he does. Caroline read a lot of the tweets and the questions that people really wanted answered. And R. Kelly went on the defensive so damn fast, like, just to make a long story even shorter than it already was, the interview lasted a total of 7 minutes. 7 minutes. 7 minutes. 7 minutes before he got up and walked out. 7 minutes. 7 minutes. It takes me 7 minutes to warm up before I go running in the morning. 7 minutes. And he was out. He was gone. He was the peace sign. He was chunking up the deuces. He was gone. Because he couldn't stand the pressure. And the pressure that was put on him wasn't even that much pressure. All Caroline asked was, how would you feel if your fans had come to a concert and, you know, chanted the things that you've been accused of? And he's like, and also, how do you, you know, feel about your fans being conflicted about what you've been accused of? He went off the deep end. He went off the deep end. He kept threatening to walk out. He kept talking about his office, you know, the stage being his office and so on and so forth. And then he just finally got up and walked out. And not before trying to tell her that she was beautiful. And Caroline, to her credit, said, I don't need your compliments, sir. Crazy. Craziest 7 to 15 minutes of the day. But the conversation that it sparked was long overdue. Long overdue. Long overdue. And it's weird, you know, from a standpoint of, you know, it took one white journalist, mind you, Jim DeRogatis of the Chicago Sun-Times, to, you know, print an expose on R. Kelly 13 years ago that people largely forgot about. This was around the same time tape came out. In fact, somebody sent the tape to his desk, and that's how it all jumped off. And now it takes I called her a non-POC British woman yesterday, but I think looking at her Twitter account, Caroline might have some, you know, Eastern Indian in her, some Spanish. I could be wrong, but it's depressing to think that we as black folks still hold to this myth of the quote-unquote fast-tailed young black girl. Yeah. Instead of putting the pressure on these perverts who stalk out young girls, we tell our girls to stop being, you know, loose and dressing crazy and carry themselves a certain way in X, Y, and Z. And that's not cool. That's not cool. But R. Kelly, you know, he's not the only one that does this. In fact, he's just the most famous person that does it. Black people in general, we have this dirty little secret in our own closets about how we just don't protect our girls and let, you know, perverts and creeps and molesters and generally unsavory ass individuals hang around young girls and then put the blame on them when something goes incredibly wrong. Like you know certain uncles and certain cousins and certain, guys that you legitimately shouldn't have around anyone under the age of 18, but they're still invited to family cookouts and different things and whatnot, and you have to look at them, you know, with the side eye just to make sure they're not going anywhere near your daughter or anything like that. That's too much. That's too much. And for once, it's time that we look within ourselves. And granted, you know, I'm not going on a respectability tangent about this because that is not, you know, what I want to do. But what I do want to say is, oh, man, they messed with my dude tie. Hold on, let me tweet him real quick. All right, now what was I saying? Yeah. It's time that we start, you know, taking the perverts in our community to task a lot stronger. And not just R. Kelly. Not just R. Kelly, but, you know, just the guys in our community. You know, the everyday dudes, the ones who claim to, you know, the ones who, you know, have the same kind of reputation, you know, the guys that, you know, do good work in the community, go to work every day, support their family, so on and so forth. Those are the same ones that, you know, you notice, you know, certain female relatives being uneasy around because he's either tried to hit on them or actually made a move. And Jim DeRogan has said it, you know, when his piece was, I guess, re-examined by the Village Voice recently, that it was sad for him to see that nobody cares about young black girls. It's the sad. I mean, and that is sad. It's very, very sad. But he's telling the truth. He's telling the truth. But I guess, you know, the redeeming quality about yesterday is that it might be, you know, one of the unfunnier interviews you'll ever see, because for a guy who, you know, claims to be, you know, the greatest R&B singer to ever do it, you know, when you claim yourself to be, you know, great and everything, you have to sort of have an unflappable confidence about you, and people can't throw you off your game. He got thrown off his game by a couple of questions, and he was cussing up a storm, threatening to walk out, eventually did walk out, and it's like, the jig is up. The jig is officially up. People know what you're about. Finally, we're starting to see people examine a little deeper the depths of your perversion. It's long overdue. It is long overdue. Might be too late for some, but it could save a few others. Because if nobody else is going to look out for you, black girls, we got to start. All of us. I mean, for crying out loud. I mean, there were people on Twitter yesterday saying girls in high school couldn't wait to tell you how old the guys they were dating. So? That has nothing to do with the price of tea in China. When you're young and impressionable, when you may lack a father figure, and some older dude creepily comes along and tries to shower you with affection and attention and compliments, it's a mind game. It's a power play. And not every young girl is, you know, able to resist that. Does that mean they deserved it? No, it does not. It absolutely doesn't. Nothing could be further from the truth. I think people just defend R. Kelly because they're just too scared to accept the fact that their favorite singer is a disgusting individual. Because after all the evidence, I mean, after tapes, after numerous settlements out of courts, hell, even young women who grew up in the 90s, Jamie Nesbitt Golden, she wrote a great piece, I think it was on XO Jane, about the myth of Fast Tail Black Girls. And she also, you know, grew up in Chicago in the 90s, around the same time that R. Kelly, you know, was, you know, stalking young girls for prey. And she highlighted that on Twitter. Like, she just randomly asked one day when we were talking, we were having a discussion about R. Kelly. She said, she retweeted, If you're a girl that grew up in Chicago in the '90s and R. Kelly came to your high school, her retweets numbered in close to the thousands, if not over the thousands, if I'm not mistaken. The evidence is in your face. There's proof that he stalked and preyed young girls, promised them fame, fortune, a way out of their, you know, impoverished lifestyles by doing, you know, what he says. And usually it's something of a sexual nature. What other evidence do you need, people? The people that are defending R. Kelly is who I'm talking to. What other evidence do you need to see that this is a disgusting individual that shouldn't even be a free man, let alone still being allowed to make albums and be seen in public and be thought of as some great, you know, musical icon? Because we can talk about the music another day. Because R. Kelly hadn't made a song that I've been interested in 15 years. But we're just talking about the man as a pervert right now. And why do we defend perverts in the black community? Why did it take so long for people to understand that Bill Cosby, despite his incessant giving to HBCUs, was pretty much a cover-up for his perversion, for his, you know, drug and rape situation? Come on, y'all. We're smarter than this. We're better than this. Let's act like it, shall we? Let's stop defending this dude. Let's stop defending dudes like him. Let's start protecting our girls and start, you know, having... This should be the start of a deeper conversation about sexuality and rape and different things in the black community, because these are things that are way past due. And if it took, you know, R. Kelly being embarrassed on HuffingtonPost.com for the conversation and a dialogue and a movement to start, so be it. So be it. But that walk he took yesterday was long overdue. It's one he should have taken in 2002 after the tape of him doing unspeakable things to a 14-year-old young girl, you know, surfaced. That should have been the time he walked away, not 13 years later after he was allowed to prosper, after he bought his way to an acquittal, after, you know, still being revered as some great musical icon that was worthy of protection, and, you know, he was being, you know, hunted himself by young girls, which doesn't make any sense. That walk R. Kelly took yesterday walking off the set was 13 years in the making. And if we keep the pressure on, hopefully he'll just keep walking off into the sunset. And he doesn't even deserve that much. On to a Week 15 wrap-up of the NFL. We'll get to this really, really quickly before we sign off for the day. And how about that Carolina Panthers-New York Giants game on Sunday? That was great fun, wasn't it? Kinda. Granted, you know, Cam Newton should be the headline, and if you have time, you should read Alexander Groot's column on the cauldron.com today about Cam Newton. Gets insight from Greg Howard and Bomani Jones. Very well done. Cam throws 5 touchdowns, becomes the first, you know, quarterback ever with 300 passing yards, 100 rushing yards, and 5 touchdowns in the same game. But instead, we're talking about the unsightly actions of one Odell Beckham Jr. Again, if you missed that game, Odell Beckham Jr. and Panthers corner Josh Norman engaged in a slap fight for pretty much 60 minutes of football. Norman was in Odell Beckham Jr.'s head right up until the time Odell Beckham Jr. caught the tying touchdown with about a minute left. Why are we talking about Odell Beckham Jr.? Well, he's been suspended for a game for his target hit on Josh Norman in a play in the fourth quarter. Was it in the fourth quarter or third quarter? I can't remember. But either way, Beckham and Norman are going down the field, you know, Jocelyn as receivers and corners do, but it's extra because they're beefing during the entire game. And then Norman goes back because it's a run play, so he wants to go help on tackle, help tackle. And all of a sudden, with his back slightly turned, you know, Norman's back slightly turned, Odell Beckham Jr. marches back and just aims himself head first into Josh Norman's jaw. Like, it really could have been worse than what it was. Head on, Josh Norman could have been concussed or even worse, you know, paralyzed. And he should have been ejected. Odell Beckham Jr. should have been ejected from that game. But instead, he received a large fine day on Monday and was suspended for one game by the NFL. He'll probably appeal. The fine will probably stand, and he'll probably play on Sunday against the Vikings. But this kind of thing here, you know, apparently this is not new. There have been guys that have been complaining about Odell Beckham Jr. starting stuff, you know, for the last 2 years. So now, unfair or not, you know, it's on him. I mean, his reputation has definitely taken a hit, you know, in the eyes of a lot of people. And I think the interesting thing about that is he plays for a coach that was supposedly Mr. Discipline in Tom Coughlin. And Tom Coughlin has said little to nothing of significance about Odell Beckham Jr.'s, you know, behavior on Sunday. Maybe Coughlin's softening up in his old age? Or maybe he's just not as, you know, stand-up-ish as everyone would like him to be. Things that make you go, hmm. That being said, we'll move on to the playoff picture now. And the AFC playoff picture is not any clearer. Hold on. Somebody's ringing my phone, knocking on my door. Okay, sorry, I had to answer the door real quick. You know how this goes. When you're the only one home, you have to come downstairs, answer the door. That being said, there are still three teams at 9-5, and with two spots left in the AFC, there's really no particular, you know, there's no particular order to how this thing is going to end, but the Steelers still remain the most dangerous team in the AFC. I'm a firm believer in that now, especially after coming back from 17 down to beat the Broncos. 17 down to beat the Broncos on Sunday. Sorry, I had to run back up the steps. And when you gain the weight that you've lost, you tend to be a little short-winded. So if I sound a little short-winded, please forgive me. But we're almost out of show anyway. But if you're a Steelers fan, you have to be really confident right now because you have the top receiving core in the game in Antonio Brown, Marcus Wheaton, and Martavis Bryant. Ben Roethlisberger is reasonably healthy. D'Angelo Williams is running the ball really well. And that defense is starting to ratchet it up a little bit, you know, with the young guys, you know, Ryan Shazier, Bud Dupree, Jarvis Jones on that front line. Corners still need a little work, but when you can get to the quarterback the way those three young guys do, kind of sort of, you know, evens it out a little bit. So, NFC wise though, it's a lot clearer. Seahawks and Vikings win one of the next 2 weeks they're in because everybody else has been eliminated. The Rams, the Bucks, well, except for the Eagles and Giants. I mean, because they could conceivably have a 3-way 7-9, and one of those teams make the playoffs. That Eagles Redskins game the day after Christmas is going to be crazy. Like, I'm going to be front and center for that one. But it's about time we start talking about, you know, the Carolina Panthers as a Super Bowl favorite. People aren't going to like that, but with Cam Newton putting up the season he's putting up, with the defense playing as well as they're playing, and it's not to take away from the Cardinals or the Packers or anybody else that, you know, could potentially be an NFC playoff team, but the Panthers right now just are the best team in the league, and they're definitely the most fun to watch. From a defensive standpoint, because they play so tight. From a Cam Newton standpoint, because he's the best quarterback personality in the league right now. Doesn't get much better than that. Doesn't get much better than that. Doesn't get much better than that. But the Eagles, meanwhile, you know, from watching what little bit I saw, because I didn't see much of Sunday's game because I was sick, but they've got a problem that extends beyond, you know, Chip Kelly, the coach. This is more about Chip Kelly, the GM, because DeMarco Murray can't stay in Philadelphia. Not after the tantrums he's thrown, not after the attitude he's been having. That's not something you really want your team to be, you know, focused on or have to deal with during a playoff push. And it's, I mean, showing over time that, you know, Ryan Matthews, Darren Sproles, and even in some cases Kenyon Barner is get more carries than DeMarco Murray. And I mean, I guess, you know, I can understand, you know, DeMarco's side of it, because Chip Kelly really pretty much used him, you know, to, you know, weaken the Dallas Cowboys. Picking up DeMarco Murray thing was not about strengthening the Eagles. It was about weakening the Dallas Cowboys. And he did it. Give him credit. But for DeMarco Murray, it probably feels like, you know, he's been played. And I understand it. So even though the Eagles would take a $13 million cap hit if they release him, and I don't know who's going to be a willing trade partner, but I think the Murray-Eagles partnership is over after a year. Has to be. Has to be. Because there's no recourse for it. I mean, there's no making up period here. There is no making up period here. The Eagles, believe it or not, control their own destiny at 6-8. Beat the Redskins on December 26th. Beat the Giants on January 3rd. They win the NFC East. Of course, they'll play the Seattle Seahawks in the division, in the wild card round, which probably doesn't sound like fun. But hey, you're in the playoffs. And two playoff appearances and two division titles in 3 years would pretty much mean Chip Kelly's Teflon. You can say what you want about him, but you're not going to get him off the field, especially if the Eagles make the playoffs this year with this, you know, haphazard roster that he put together. But you can definitely bet there'll be a conversation with owner Jeffrey Lurie. Wow, we're almost at a show. Thanks to the person who interrupted my show to knock on the door, ask for somebody who wasn't here. That being said, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in to All Subjects Everything today. Greatly appreciate your time. If you missed us live, blogtorio.com/ChrisStevensOnAir. iTunes, All Subjects Everything, same thing for Stitcher Mobile. Tomorrow we'll be on the air, hopefully with no interruptions. So y'all enjoy your Tuesday, and until tomorrow morning, y'all be good or be good at it. What a joy it is.
My side.